dear listeners and compatriots. Welcome to For Real. I'm your host, Kim Stewart, and I'm happy to say we have a very special VIP guest for this episode, Mark Stewart. My own very dear husband is in the studio. Okay, I may have had to encourage and persuade, bribe, a tad bit more than my usual guest interactions, but he did it and I loved it. Nobody knows me better, cheers for me harder, or can provide this behind the scenes situations more diplomatically than Mark. It was a total joy to force him to talk into a microphone, and I'm pretty sure he still loves me. You can judge for yourself in this very rare and very delightful conversation with the one and only Mark Stewart. Mark, thank you for joining me on this very special edition of For Real. You were coerced, honey. Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome. At first, I wasn't enthusiastic about being here today, but that's all changed.
That's what we call a reframing. You blanched white when I said, can you please be on the pod just this once? But now you're here, see? And even though I keep asking you not to make your legs bounce up and down because it affects the microphone, you are doing a great job.
Thank you. You are too. I think they're off to a great start.
Okay, listen, yeah. I'm just going to ask you some soft pitches to start, okay? Just want to relax, take a deep breath. I know you're not usually in a podcasting environment.
Well, this is my fifth this week.
Oh, yeah. You have a secret life. Okay, no, you can't look at my notes.
Oh.
Number one, Mark Stewart. Course of study in college.
Physics and Spanish.
Correct. Okay, your favorite movie.
We'll say About Time.
Oh.
But that's not it. It's actually the other one that you could tell me which one I like better than that.
Hunt for Red October.
Oh, I like that too. But I was actually thinking of Dan in Real Life.
Oh, love that one too.
Those are probably three.
Mark, you have such a sonorous voice. I'm listening to it as a podcasting host. Mm-hmm. And it's really lovely.
Thank you. They've always wanted me on radio.
Who's they?
the radio.
The crowd. Yeah. Okay. Number three of the soft pitches. Are you feeling more and more relaxed as we go?
Did we already do two?
Yeah. Major. Okay. Least favorite food.
Sweet peppers.
Yeah, I already know that. I mean, I have been cooking for you for 25 years, so actually there are a couple on that list.
Probably green's my least of the
colors, the peppers in the subcategory. Favorite book? We'll subcategorize this.
Ordinary
as well.
Grace.
Ordinary Grace by William Kent Kruger, an excellent pick.
Yes.
Who recommended it?
You did.
Thank you. And the fashion trend you miss and wish would come back.
Moon boots. Easy.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that. And also, I know what to get you for Christmas. Yes. You are 6'3", so if we add a moon boot platform, I will need a stepladder. Okay, here's another question that's actually totally soft pitch. For our listeners who have heard my voice but not yours, Mark, would you like to tell our audience how we met? And who liked who first?
Oh, yes. We met at college.
We did.
And we happened to be in the same choir and maybe a class as well. And so that was just the beginning. And I seem to recall that I may have been interested in you before that was reciprocated. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have varying views of this, but yes, you think that you liked me first.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And well, you just didn't know you liked me yet. I just realized it first. Thanks.
Okay. I mean, you were patient. You played this right. In fact, this is an entire chapter in my new book, which is called Star for Jesus and Other Jobs I Quit.
It's a great book.
We'll be talking about it momentarily. Thank you, Mark, for saying it was great.
It is. I've read it.
You finally read it.
Yes, I was on the list of things to do, and I did that.
You just needed like, we'll say 14 months.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was worth the wait.
Oh, Mark, you liked me, and I liked you as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up to reality, which is probably an 80s ballad. And I just realized, God darn it, why am I not dating that man? Because you're so great. And now we're 25 years in. So well done being patient for a moment. Although I want to point out, you dated other people. So sometimes when I kind of liked you, you were dating someone else, vice versa. Listen, you have to accept the truth.
That's not quite right. I had made a decision. It's probably not going to work out. So I might as well see if there's anybody else out there.
I really don't believe that that's true at all. So we're going to just disagree with that. And now we've been married for 25
glorious years.
Five glorious years. Yeah. Most of them have been very glorious.
Yeah.
Despite your wishes, Mark, you are here so we can chat about my new book just a little bit.
Yes.
And the reason you are the guest of honor is because you're actually in this book quite a bit. Now that you've read it, you have probably seen yourself in the pages. And so for someone who's private enough not to even have social media and to disdain it, you are honestly usually my most beloved person on social media. I'm not taking it offensively because I think you are more loving than me. and then also you're in a book. So how are you navigating that these days, Mark? Because you probably did not marry me thinking I would be talking and writing about you publicly mm-hmm. with great frequency.
You know, I think over the years, I have been willing to just be who we are. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think I made a decision many years ago that just to trust you with the things mm-hmm. That you share about us or our family. And so, I mean, reading through the book, I wasn't quite sure what I might find, but I knew that it would be, that I wouldn't wish it hadn't been written. I trust you with the information about our family that you share.
So tell me about your reactions. I'll punt to you in just a second if you have any questions for me. But, you know, our very dear friend Maria Goff has said before that her husband, Bob, when he wrote his first book, which was Love Does, she is in that book a ton. And there are so many stories about her and about the family, about the kids. And she has said to me and to others, I read that book and thought, wait, is this how it all happened? Because the writer has the voice, the writer has the pen. So Maria ended up writing her own book in part to have her thoughts and her stories out there. First of all, are you writing a book?
Not yet.
Okay. Oh, well, you know, you were the first published in our family.
That's true. I think it might be.
Yeah, it's probably
it's
in here.
Yeah.
In an upper shelf. Do you remember the name of your published work?
Well, The Effect of Mechanical Stimulation on CLR.
It's zippy. It's a zippy title. There was a lot
calcitonin
of marketing.
Calcitonin receptor-like receptor. CRLR mRNA in osteoblast-like MG63 cells.
It rolls off the tongue.
Yes. Sold, a classic.
It's a classic. Mm-hmm. It sold a lot of copies.
Out of print.
It is out of print. Yeah. You sold out.
Yeah.
So you were, that was your master's thesis. What is it? Master's thesis?
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the several degrees that we all ate tuna fish for. And so your book, hardback, mm-hmm. I might add,
right.
Bound, embossed cover, came out before mine. But then you slowed, Mark, and I haven't seen anything from you since. So are you working on a new title?
It's just been bottled up inside of me. And so one day, not soon, it may be in
unleash.
Print again. Yeah.
Okay, good to know. So you're reading this book that has you in it. That hasn't happened to me before. I haven't seen myself in a book.
Mm-hmm.
Talk us through that process, will you?
Well, it's really interesting because I've read your fiction books, which I enjoy.
Thank you.
And sometimes in fiction, you can maybe see an amalgamation of characters or an experience that isn't exactly how it happened, but it's inspired by something that maybe we would know.
Right.
And so this was very different to read about our lives, for real.
Right. And no fictional characters.
No. And so in some ways, the stories were so familiar. Mm-hmm. Some, you know, hilarious, some sad, some heart-wrenching. So to read through those in some ways was reliving them. Mm. And then the framing that you did to tie them together or to loop that with another story was really nice to see and to read.
Hmm. That's kind of you to say. Were there, and you read this on the plane?
Yes, shortly before I lost my iPad on the plane, yes.
Okay, I wasn't going to bring that up, but it seems like that maybe is a grievous memory for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you left it on a flight.
It's not back yet, but it has been found.
By the absolute miraculous grace of God. Yeah. Raise your hand, listeners, if you have ever heard of any time in the history of peoplekind that the airline has found and shipped transatlantically an iPad that was stolen. I mean, left. So anyway, well, you were jet lagged, honey. You weren't even paying attention to your life.
Sure.
And maybe you were so moved by the book that you weren't thinking clearly and left things.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have not asked you about this post-reading anything specific, right? I didn't ask you about stories that made you laugh, the stories that made you cry, the stories you wish I hadn't told. So do you have anything to tell me? Now that we're behind microphones, you can be very honest, honey.
I'd say, I think the book runs the gamut of of some of our high points and low points. So bringing me back to when our oldest daughter was little and going to the science center.
Okay, let's pause there.
Yeah.
I think that one is worth the mention. So that in the book is, we won't tell all the stories of the book, otherwise you don't really need to know that, do you people? But we have some different parenting styles that were more probably apparent at that stage. And by that, I mean at that stage in Anna's life, evidently one of us had a predisposition to shielding her from the truth. And that was you.
Yes, for sure.
So we went to the science center.
Yeah,
it was
and
the
she
Titanic
was very
exhibit.
Very interested in the Titanic, and I was when I was a young lad, and so we shared that. And so there was a traveling exhibit of the Titanic.
I think it's funny that you just ripped that off. She was very interested in the sinking of a ship and detritus and sadness. But that's the thing. She didn't know the whole story.
Yes. So the Titanic, as many listening may know, sunk. And so I think Anna knew that part. But we had a book before we went to the exhibit.
Oh,
and in
yeah.
the book, the Titanic did sink as well as it did in real life. But I'd skipped over a couple pages where about the lifeboats
that.
And then the captain going down with the ship and things like that. And so I think Anna had the impression that the boat sunk and the ship sunk and everybody was okay. And so we went
which
to the,
false.
Which
yeah.
isn't how exactly how it happened. It was more of withholding rather than
outwardly falsehoods.
Yes, right.
That's so, good. You can defend yourself right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so we went to the exhibit, and apparently the people that designed the exhibit wanted to tell the whole story. And so Kim went with Anna to one of the placards and was reading the placard and saying, "It's so sad that that the captain went down with the ship." And Anna's head snapped to her, and then her huge moon eyes started tearing up.
Fireworks.
And so she didn't know that before.
I had not known that you were secretly not telling any part of this story. When I think about that now, it's very, I mean, you were just doing a kindness to our daughter. You don't want to talk about death and destruction. I'm not sure what it says about me that I did. That's a problem probably, but now she knows.
I think it's good.
Everybody knows now. It's all out in the open. Okay, so you were saying, I interrupted you. So you said some of those stories, I don't know what you were going to
say. Yeah, from early, our kids with very young, really early in life, when I was just a few years old. And then there's stories that you vividly tell about your grandma, about Grandma Edna and her passing. And again, those are both experiences that we've lived. And it, I think in the book, the theme of grace weaves through our lives in that same way from very early on until the very end. And so that really struck me.
We have to mine it a little bit. You know, I think my own heart is predisposed to, I was just talking with a friend about this yesterday, that it's so weirdly easy for me to look for what's going wrong, what hasn't worked out yet, what I'm waiting for. It's become more of a discipline, I think, in our marriage and in our individual lives to pause more frequently and say, okay, well, let's look for the grace. Let's look for the presence of God. Let's look at what he's doing or his faithfulness to us. And again, I don't know that that's my knee-jerk reaction as a human being, but boy, it sure changes the light in the room for us and for our kids when we're more mindful to do that. So I hope that the book reminds people of the beauty that can come from that, even though I'm doing it very imperfectly.
Well, and I think as we have more years under our belt, that we see more about hard things in the world. And so that ribbon of grace or the recurrence of grace can be like a rhythm that may be able to offset some of the hard things that we inevitably experience the more years we're on earth.
Yeah. Ribbon of grace.
That's probably from your book.
I don't know that it is. If it is, I'm so glad I wrote it. Otherwise, it sounds like you have a writer in you. Let's talk about grace in parenting our wily children. We cannot throw them under the bus, nor would we want to. They actually are really great, and they adore you. This has been super fun for me as our kids have all become teenagers and now young adults. They think you're hilarious, which victory, right? Like to have a teenager, you work with teenagers. Yeah. This is your everyday. And years ago, I remember you coming home from your orthodontic practice saying, the toughest crowd is who?
Teenage girls.
Yeah. What age?
Early teenage
girls. Yeah. So like.
Yeah. 12, 13, 14. Yeah.
He says with a somber face.
And I love working with that age group. And whether they're boys or girls. But it's just for like, especially for humor or for engagement. No. It's just hard to get a laugh.
Totally.
It's a tough crowd.
Yeah. Really tough crowd. Yeah. Our kids think you're funny. How did you swing that?
I think it helps that you laugh at my, you think, so you laugh at my jokes. And so they just kind of like,
think?
I think that's part
totally.
Of it.
Totally. So you think, but you are very funny.
Thank you.
Right now you're a little bit more nervous than
a little
normal,
bit.
But you're really loosening up, hon.
Thank you. I'm getting there.
I think the reason that they think you're funny in part is because you absolutely will not take yourself seriously. If you were offended by when we poke fun at you, or if I'm offended when they poke fun, then it goes south. Because if we're taking ourselves too seriously, the intimation is all the things that I'm doing are right and true. And you and I both know that's not right.
No, I think that comes from just honest humility of like, we're not that great and I'm not that great. And yeah, we're not too proud
You're great, but yeah, totally.
That's the other thing. Everything in the book seemed like it was like favorable about
you.
Me. There weren't a lot of negative, you know. stories. And so you just left a lot of those out. So I really appreciated that.
Oh my gosh. As if I'm going to put a bunch of negative stories about you. First of all, I don't have very many. And second of all, I will say I was just up in our bathroom and you did leave a lot of shavings of your face and head in your sink.
Yes.
And I feel like this is a good time to say, are you going to clean that today?
Oh, for sure. Shortly after we finish this really lovely recording that I'm so pleased to be here for.
The only thing that could best it would be to take the shop vac and clean your sink.
Maybe next.
Oh, I love that. Okay, Mark, I'd like to talk to you about your presence on my Instagram and Facebook feed. And this is what I want to tell you. First of all, I almost always okay what I'm going to post with our children. And I don't always.
I learn about it at work from my coworkers.
Well, I can't wait for you to come home. And so sometimes your staff will say, oh, we saw you dancing. So first of all, publicly, thanks for being so nice about that. Do you have regrets? Yeah. Do you want me to stop doing that?
No.
Okay, great. So I just want to say that it is either really funny or disheartening that I spend a lot of time trying to get to my readers and help them in wherever they are and serve them, come alongside them and make content that makes a difference to them and encourages them. And do you know, by far, the highest, most viewed reel on my Instagram feed is not me talking about Jesus, okay? It is you showing me how to catch a mouse with the Nutribullet. 47,000 views, people, as of today. 47,000 views. Explain this culture for someone who is not on social media and has never made a reel in his life. Can you tell me? How come?
No, I can't explain that. I can't. But, you know, that video was not made for social media.
No.
That was to show your parents what I was thinking of to get
A mouse out of their house.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And here's the thing about that. Did you know that was on, I posted that on February 14 because I thought, oh gosh, I should probably mention that I really love my husband. I don't know why. I mean, if you know me, you know I love my husband. You don't need to, and you don't look for my verbal affirmation on Instagram. But I could not, for the life of me, find anywhere near recent photo of the two of us just like smiling. It was always like dancing weird with our face or doing some strange 80s dance, or there was a kid in the background making an inappropriate face. I have nothing of the two of us. So what came up? You and a mouse.
Well, not a real, it was the miming of how to catch the
mouse. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, physics major.
No mice were harmed. No mice
were harmed in the filming. Thank you for...
Yeah, just so everybody's clear on that.
Okay, well, I'm done grilling you. Do you have any questions for me now that you have the power of a microphone?
Yes. Yes, I do. So you've written a lot of novels, which I've loved. And I just wondered, this is a different book than the types of books that you've written previously. And I wonder if you would reflect upon that.
Oh, I love it. This is a very formal question. This one was harder and easier to write. So the
Is that what
is
I'm supposed
this
to
on?
Do?
Yes, you did. You're doing great. You're
Thank
very
you.
Podcasty when it all comes down to it.
Do I have to lean at the microphone when I ask questions?
Getting real comfortable. So this one was harder to write in that I couldn't kill anyone off in the fourth chapter because these are all real people. So in fiction, you get to decide. Like I have this huge cork board and I map out what happens at different parts of, 10% in, 25%, and I know the twists and the turns that I'm writing toward. But if it's not working, I can change it. I can move those pieces around. They're all in my head anyway. So it was a little rougher with memoir-like stories because those people are all very real. There were definitely times when I'm just behind the scenes. If I'm ever writing about something particularly tender or still evolving, mm-hmm. or a difficult relationship, I do feel the freedom. In fact, I tend to think it's a responsibility to protect all of the people who are still living and who are involved in those things. And so I would never, I am happy to change a name and circumstances and all sorts of things. There's one chapter in the book about what grace is not. And so that has very difficult stories that I intentionally cherry-picked to tell a larger narrative, but I'm not basing the story of the people in that chapter on anyone in particular. So I still did kind of take some of that storytelling bent into this book. What was easier is that they really are all my stories. You and I have talked about this, how, you know, in this book, and even like as we're in the marketing push or the book launch season is what we call it, there are only so many things that I can feel ownership over. So in other words, when Sugar came out and I was so excited that Target picked it up, and I would drive around to different Targets in our, remember that?
Yes.
In our town, making sure that they had it on an end cap or they had it available. I mean, it was just total lunacy. You feel this different, like, urgency to make sure that everything's where it needs to be. I don't in most ways feel that same hysteria this time, because the content of the book is true down to my bones. I know for sure, first of all, this is the best book I can write right now. So there's a freedom there. And also, these stories are all true. They all happen to me. So whether people feel good about them or not, that actually doesn't take away or give, because they are my lived life, yeah. Right? And so there's a little freedom in that I haven't had before with fiction. I feel the freedom to say, I absolutely was run over by a car when I was 2, and it does not make any sense. And as my dad says, we report it, someday Jesus will explain it. And I can't put a whole lot of language around that to make anybody hold it more dear, but it's dear to me. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of writing has been more vulnerable, but in some ways has had a little bit more freedom attached to it.
Thank you. I like that.
You like that answer?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Another question I have is, so the writing a book centered on grace, can you tell me about this time for this book, or this theme for this book at this time? Your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, it was a total bait and switch, really, because I first of all, grace for my own life, it has been slippery. I'm an earner. I'm an achiever. I'm a striver. As are you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that can be a superpower and fantastic. And in a lot of spaces, that's actually, going to help in the area of grace and understanding that God has ample grace upon grace upon grace, and that I am compelled to give grace to other people, that entire system is nonsensical, because everywhere else in my life I earn, there's a ledger sheet. I mean, even in my healthiest, most dear relationships, even with you, I'm not going to go eat bonbons all day, every day, and like expect you to just do all the things. That's not, mm-hmm. I don't think that that's a clear metaphor for grace, but I'm saying there's a tug and a pull and a give and a take and a reciprocity, even in healthy relationships. So to try to understand a God who says, I have balanced your account, I have paid it in full before you approach me, before you have shown your shoes, before you've got your best clothes on, before you brush your teeth and clean up your heart, I actually already balanced. The ledger is clean. It doesn't make sense. And I've spent probably way too many years of trying to make it make sense. The beauty of deciding I can't make sense of it is where real freedom starts. So just personally, I've been wrestling with grace for, I mean, it's kind of crazy to say wrestle with grace, like wrestling with the best gift you've ever been given, for a really long time. So there's a personal piece of that. And then a couple more things. Culturally, I think we're in a moment that's just so thirsty for grace. We've been through it the last few years, all of us. We were visiting Anna recently in Spain, and I was struck by all of the signs that still remain, like they're kind of scratched through sometimes, about, you know, wearing a mask or being socially distant, or just the words in Spanish that we had here. And it was kind of a visual reminder to me, oh yeah, we all went through this. Mm-hmm. This wasn't just in my hometown, right? And we all have felt that weariness and a wariness, right? I think it didn't do a great, I think part of what we have held has been a wariness of each other. Our world's super loud. I don't think we were meant to know everything all the time. And that wears on your spirit. So I don't know that we've ever had a time in my lifetime when we've been more desperate for getting grace from each other. So there's a personal, there's kind of a corporate, and then really even for my kids, our kids, this book, I hope will be, I hope it will be an Ebenezer stone. Like, I hope it will be a marker for them for how good God has been in really hard things, right? I mean, there are hard things in this book. And there are so many joyful things too. So that's definitely, I don't think I set out with that aim, but the longer I wrote these like stories of our family and generations before, I hope they, at one point, you know, maybe when they're our age, if they read this book, I'm sure they'll read it before, but well, Mitch might not, but, I'm sure it's, I hope at some point that when they read this, they have a little bit of an inkling of, oh my gosh, wow, there, as you said, was a ribbon of grace through the whole darn story. And then that they can look for that same ribbon in their own lives. Hmm. If not, it's fine. I'm fine. It's okay.
That was really nice. Thank you.
Thank you for asking. I have a couple more questions.
Yes.
Even though I've been crying, I do want to make clear that we do have a lot of laughter in this particular book.
Yes.
You have championed that because we have often said privately that Christians are kind of not always so great with humor because we're, I think collectively there's a fear that you will offend someone. So just know there's no fear of that in this book. Okay. Also, but that's true, right? Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that, but humor is like, I don't know, you get to go places with humor that you can't elsewhere. My biggest compliment is when you are reading something that I've written and you guffaw. You
which
actually
I did
are
many
tough,
times.
You are a tough crowd because you're around all of us all the time. So I find it to be very gratifying if I cut through your jaded personality.
You are very funny. You are very funny. It's not hard.
That's just for the record. He doesn't actually think that. Let's talk a little bit more about our home and then I will let you go because I know that. How are you doing? How's it going? Let's get an emotional temperature in the room.
I'm feeling it.
You're no, feeling it.
Feeling it. Let's keep rolling.
Okay.
Cameras are going. Mics are hot.
Perfect. I knew it would happen. Just need a little bit more time. Can you do it again next week?
Sure.
Ooh, and you're going to write a book. All sorts of truth-telling is happening in the studio today. Okay, Mark, one thing that I have really appreciated about you, I probably wrote about this, I don't know. You are very quick to give me grace in our marriage, like real quick, probably too quick. You should probably be meaner. No, okay. So I want to thank you for that. Just like say that out loud to you. One of the reasons I can write a whole ding dang book about grace is because we are living in that all the time in this house. And you give it out like you are made of it. So I want to thank you for that. And also say that you have not always given yourself grace. So I don't think you're alone with that. I mean, I think I'm in the same boat. You treat me and the kids and all the people you love with just this extravagant kindness. And I think you would, I mean, I don't mean to speak for you, but I think you would say that at different points in your life, it's been harder for you to extend that to yourself. Since you are not alone in that, what are your thoughts on that? And is there anything that you know now about that that you wish you would have known 20 years ago?
My first thought was just as our kids have grown and become, you know, who they are has, well, allowed or forced an understanding of the arc of their character or how you know, if things didn't always go right at certain times how that forms them.
Right. Yes. Uh-huh.
I don't know if I said that quite right, but
yeah, no, that's right.
So I think seeing that live in our own home with our own children who we love dearly, has influenced me. I don't know that I've put words to that in that way before, but seeing that has, for mistakes they made or things like that, and how that has formed who they are and made them better or stronger, or maybe that's rubbed off on me in my own, you know, in my own life, to have some grace for those things with an eye to the future.
Right. Yeah, I think we have talked a lot over the years about how we talk to our kids in general. Sometimes we scream, okay? Everybody know this, okay? Not talking to Disney over here. But in general, I think we really work hard to talk with kindness and grace in our family to our children. We definitely screw that up. But in general, that's the hope. And then I'm always kind of surprised at how I just pass go in the way I talk to myself. Like there are some times over the years that I've thought, you would never say that to Thea, right? Step off. Have you found that as well? Maybe that's part of the parenting piece.
Yeah, I think so. Or maybe just the exercise of giving grace to, on a regular basis, to each of us. Because we're, like you said, we screw up all the time. And so it's like a practice field to be able to do that. And maybe seeing that on a regular basis, if each of us is giving that grace to each other, again, rubs off on how we treat ourselves.
Yeah, totally. Okay, Mark, I'm going to let you go back to making retainers, which I know is one of the most exciting hobbies of your present. You're very good at it.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, because of you, I wear my retainer every night. And that's something I never thought I would say at 48. But I do want to tell you, I'm so glad you came here. And also, I'm so glad that we laugh together. Here's what I'm thinking about. We were children when we wed. I was 23. You were 22. Yeah, Rob the King. I'm such a cougar. We were clueless, largely. I knew you were a good man. I mean, I hoped that that's what I'd known you a long time before we started dating. And also, I knew that I laughed hard with you. If I had articulated that at 23, I probably would have felt silly that that was an important thing. I was in kind of a serious phase with, you know, eyeliner. But that is so important, right? The way that we've been able to keep laughing with each other. I'm thinking of last week in Spain, when I was walking down the street and you were behind me and I thought you were beside me.
There was another man beside you. Is this the story?
This is the story. Yep, there was a guy next to me. It was pouring rain. In my defense, I was wearing a hood in the rain. And I thought, Mark, I thought you were next to me and you weren't. Pedro, I don't know if that's his real name, was next to me, but I did not look close enough. We were passing a jewelry store, and so I turned to him in my hood, not looking at him, and said, "You wanna get some jewels?" This is not, he was not my husband. He literally recoiled because I turned at the last jewels, and he was startled and absolutely scurried away. Meanwhile, you and the kids were behind me howling, not intervening.
Yeah, when Thea really saw it in advance what was going to happen. She said to herself, "I think mom thinks that's dad. That is not
dad. Not even close to dad." So we howled through that. And then only, I don't know, hours later, I was walking. I must have a hard time with spatial awareness because I didn't see I was next to a woman, I think. Was it a man? No, it was a woman that I was walking closer closer and closer to. Alarmingly close. But here's why I'm telling this story. This is what you have been for me for so many years. You helped me stay out of the ditch in so many ways because I was again, not aware. I'm not related to this woman. I was pretty much almost touching her. Okay. And Mark, you say quietly in my ear, Kim, you are
Kim.
So calmly. And I know that's your voice of warning. And so I snapped my head up and was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I was on top of her shoulders.
You thought looking, it was Anna?
I'm sure. I thought it was another person in my family. Yeah. So thank you for keeping me out of trouble in so many ways, my whole ding-dong adult life, Mark.
Yes, you're very welcome.
You're the best, and I absolutely love you.
Thank you. I love you too.
Thanks for coming on here, even though you hated it.
Yeah, no, I hated the idea of it.
Okay.
But I knew that it would be just kind of like a conversation with you.
With
which
lights
I really,
and mic.
Yeah, with a couple extra things.
Yeah.
And I knew that it would be fun to have a good conversation with you because I like conversing with you.
You're the
and
best.
You look pretty.
Thank you. He's the best. We are talking a windfall of blessing that I ended up with this guy, and believe me, I know it. Even on my crankiest days, there are many. When I don't remember all sorts of important things, I do remember that Mark choosing me and me choosing him back is the best decision that made for a life that I love. Thank you, Mark, who faithfully listens to every episode of this podcast, for being you and for loving me. Also, I think it's super weird that you listen to these conversations on double speed, efficient, and Minnie Mouse voice weird. That's it for today. If you want the full story of how Mark and I ended up together, pre-order my new book, Star for Jesus and Other Jobs I Quit. Did you know that pre-orders often chart the course for the success of a book? They count big time, you guys. If you ever want to help out an author that you love, pre-ordering their book, especially if you're thinking about ordering it sometime anyway, is a great way to show and share the love. Thank you for being my people. Thank you for sharing the love and all of these roads with me. Come back soon, okay? For real.